Good afternoon, everybody. This is step one, two, and three. Workshop. Let's begin with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Let thy will, not mine, be done. Amen. We got three steps to do, and we're going to do them in sequence. And I have it pretty much set up whereas we'll begin with some icebreakers. And we go pass out the icebreakers. And while she's passing them out, I tell you what the next process going to be. We're going to do step one, and then I'm going to pass out a summary of step one. Then we're going to take turns, and we'll probably read through the summary. And then on the back of the summary, I have maybe about two or three questions that basically personal, pertain to your perspective of it. And then we'll have someone to come up to the mic and pitch on their perspective of that step. After that, I will summarize what we went through, and then we'll move on to the next step. These are the icebreakers for you guys to fill out. So you're going to need a pen and pencil or a pencil. You're not turning them in for for marking or doing anything. And there's no, the answers I will give you the key to them. And so you're not being graded on anything. As you know, icebreakers are usually used to kind of loosen everybody up and kind of get you in the mood of the particular section that we're using. So let's give a couple of minutes to fill them out right quick. There's no correct answer, no right or wrong. It is right or wrong answers, but you're not you're not being graded on them. You go keep them to yourself. They're for you, for your perspective. Okay. The first three steps are so important that repeating them over and over, it's really a good thing. And as you go along, I think you'll find that to be the case as well. The icebreakers, serves as freedom from? Yeah, yes. God is doing for what we could never do for ourselves, yes. Let, yes. Willingness is the, yes. I can't, God, and I'll let. Mm-hmm. Half measures, yes. That is so important. I can almost repeat that one. First, surrender, then. Serenity, kind of threw a wrench in there. Being humble means being, yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. The elevator is broken, please take, yes, especially one, two, and three. God's will be done, yes. The answer is in the steps. Yes. Recovery is in the steps as well. When in doubt? Yes. Life is a dance. Tra-la-la. When you learn the only requirement for see how membership is a. That wasn't bad, huh? We'll go pass out the summary of step one. This is my version of a summary of step one. And so we go read through it, and then I got four questions on the back of it. And so to break the monotony of it, I start off reading, then maybe we'll get someone else to continue to complete the reading. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Who cared to admit complete defeat? Practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It is truly awful to admit that. Food, with plate in hand, we have warped our minds into such an obsession of destructive compulsive eating that only an act of providence can remove it from us. No other kind of bankruptcy is like this one. Food now become the rapacious creditor, bleeding us of all self-sufficiency and all will to resist its demands. Once this stark fact is accepted, our bankruptcy as a going concern is complete. But upon entering and see how, we perceive that only through utter defeat are we able to take our first step towards liberation and strength. Our admission of personal powerlessness finally turned out to be the firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. We know that little good can come to any compulsive eater who joins Seehow unless he or she has first accepted his or her devastating weakness and all its consequences. Until he or she so humbly himself or herself, he or she is abstinent of any would be what vicarious of our happiness, he or she will find none at all. Proved beyond doubt by an immense experience, this is one of the facts of Seehow life. The principle is that we shall find no enduring strength until we find admit complete defeat is the main taproot from which our whole program has sprung and flowed and flowered. While this insisted that every Seehow member must hit rock bottom first, the answer is that few people will sincerely try to practice the Seehow program unless they have hit bottom. For practicing the remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and action. that almost no other eater that is still eating compulsively can dream of taking. Who wish to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who want to confess his faults to another and make restitutions for harm done? Who care anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry see how message to the next sufferer? No. The average overeater, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive. To stay alive himself. Under the lash of compulsive eating, we are driven to see how, and there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. Then and only then do we become an open-minded to conviction and willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from us. This is my version of the summary of step one. I give you another minute to scan through it, and then look at the questions at the back. And they apply personally to you. And if everyone have a pen or pencil, kind of jot down your answer to those particular questions. When you first join CHOW, the program, a series of questions were provided to guide you along the path of the first three steps. Now, could you please write on the following four questions? After reviewing step one, are you willing to admit complete defeat? It is said that we have an obsession. Explain what that means to you. Do you now accept that you are totally powerless over food and that it has made your life unmanageable? What is the first and most important act necessary to launching you into the other steps? My name is Ernest. I'm a compulsive eater. I'm a sugar addict. I've been abstinence. I've been completely abstinence from the program. I mean, with the program. 8 years, 2 months. I've given away 79 pounds. I sponsor on all four levels. When I first began the program, I struggled with accepting, admitting that I was a compulsive eater. Everyone in our meetings and in our live meeting was standing up and saying that, telling their name and saying that they were compulsive eaters. But I struggled with it. Then when I look around and listen to others tell their story, it was so obvious to me that I was completely a compulsive eater. I was 80 pounds overweight. My doctor was telling me about I'm borderline diabetic. Yet I was so close-minded that I could not see the compulsion in my eating. Because I was able to do so many other things with self-will. I stopped drinking when I decided that I had enough. I stopped smoking, which was probably the hardest thing I ever did in my life. It was so many other things I did based on my self-drive and willingness. But when it came to food, my struggle, it set in that I had been taking and making these New Year's resolutions, and you know all about them, to last only sometime they'll last 3 weeks. Sometime I may get up to 5 weeks of what I was going to do and how I was going to do it and what it take to stop eating, especially sugar and flour, to find myself back struggling all over again. Every little pound I mustered to take off during those first few weeks of being set in, and I put it all back on. You get to a point where you don't want to make the resolution anymore. You really don't want to look or talk about another diet, you know. The struggle set in, and you look for solutions within yourself. And that was my problem. My problem was that I never admitted that I was powerless over food and that my life had become unmanageable. It was until I came into the program that I was able to see others pitching. That's why going to meetings are so important. Others pitching and telling their story. And the only difference was that it was just another person telling my story. I could just exchange the names, and that was my problem. And so I began to see that my life was really unmanageable. I began to be open-minded. That was a struggle for me. You ever go through something and look back at it and find out that, wow, it might have been a big struggle. It wasn't that hard. It shouldn't have been that hard if I was open-minded enough to see it. Acceptance is this first step. Accepting that you're powerless over food and that your life has become unmanageable. To the extent in which you accept this step, it's going to be to the extent in which the other 11 steps go work for you. So, that's my story. And that's not it in a nutshell, but step one, I struggled. And it's not just my willingness to give up food, but willingness to be open for acceptance. It's the point of acceptance that you go change your life around, that some may have already changed their life. And so if you wrote on acceptance, or you wrote on this first step, we'll give you a chance to share with us if you can. We have a form to sign off on, or that she has it. And the form is just giving us permission to record your statements as you come to the mic. So could we have someone to just share with us what you wrote on the first step, or on the first step, or any one of the questions of the first step.
I'm Jean, compulsive eater, bulimic, anorexic. And step one, after reviewing step one, this is when I first entered CHOW, July 4th, 1995. After reviewing step one, are you willing to admit complete defeat? No, not really. I was only doing it the first 30 days on a dare from my potential next 1,000-year sponsor. She said to me, if you don't want to do this program, I'll gladly refund your misery in 30 days. So that's how I started. And I went in with my last and final husband, who, and I'm my ex now, but I went in with him, and I was not a happy camper. I didn't want to go in. It was how then, because I knew all about you guys. And so I go to step two, and it says that if we have, it is said that we have an obsession. Explain what that means to you. Mm-hmm. For me, once I take a bite of flour or sugar, I have never been able to just take a bite ever in my life. I can't stop, and I want more, 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 more. That's my obsession. Mm-hmm. And three, do you now accept that you are totally powerless over food and that it has made your life unmanageable? Yes. My life was unmanageable. It was a total mess when I walked in, and my food addiction was out of control. It was killing me. I couldn't stand up straight because I was purging 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 times a day. And I was 51 and a half years old, and I've been doing it most of my life. And then I had anorexia for many, many years. So I was in our sister program for many, many years, but I only did the first three steps. So I can't blame it on them. It was me. And then when I came in here, well, things changed. And the fourth, what is the first and most important act necessary to launch you into the other steps? For me, I became willing and I wanted to continue after the first 30 days. Even though I had to sit on my hands for the first year because I wanted to purge the abstinent food. I had such a terrible addiction to sugar. But I went through it. And I have to remember and refer back to step one. I don't ever want to relapse in this program. I had 17 years in the other program because I don't think I have any more relapse in me. So I always refer. And I like the reminder, I must always review step one. And when I went down to my car to get my warmer coat and I came back up this east end, I smelled something that I haven't had in 23 years. And I said the serenity prayer till I said, where is that room with steps 1, 2, and 3? So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Hi, I'm Marari, and I'm a compulsive eater. After reviewing step one, are you willing to admit complete defeat? Absolutely. It is said that we have an obsession. Explain what that means to you. So what I wrote is that if the food is in my system, I can't take it out of my mind. And I think when I talk to other compulsive eaters, usually they understand the conversation that food has with us. And if something is in the refrigerator, I cannot stop thinking about it. And that's how I know that there's something weird about me. Weird in the sense that it's not, other people are like, what? You know, so if you're a compulsive eater, I think you get it. Do you now accept that you are totally powerless over food and that it has made your life unmanageable? I just said, yup. And what is the first and most important act necessary to launching you into the other steps? For me, it was acceptance and surrender. And I started program in August 24 of 1996. And when I came into the meetings, I had no idea what it was. I just knew that I was tired of making promises to myself to be healthier. And I always, every morning I would wake up and pray to God that this day would be different. And I would make my lunch, and by 9 a.m., I had already eaten my lunch, and then I was planning something else. And so I'm just, you know, super grateful that I had no problem realizing that I was different when it came to food. And there's no shame in it, and now I can share it openly and willingly to whomever wants me to talk about it. So thanks.
Okay, we could do one more. One more, if one more is willing to step up. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Kathy, a compulsive eater.
Hi, Kathy.
I'd just like to talk about the second question. Mm-hmm. It is said that we have an obsession. Explain what that means to you. What that means to me is I go back and I think about when I was completely obsessed with eating and how it ruled my life. I used to work at a school, and I can still remember that as I'd walk into the office, they'd have those things, right? And when I was using, I call it using, I would go into the classroom, and I couldn't think, I couldn't help the kids. There was nothing I could do to relieve the obsession to go back into the office to get those things. So it completely ruled my life. And that was a terrible place to be. I experienced that also at my church, and that was especially painful, that I'm serving little children in my church, right? And in the kitchen, I would go between little breaks and see what was left over from the night before. And, I mean, you could almost even say that was kind of stealing because, I mean, it was leftover food, but it wasn't mine. And that was especially painful. But that's where the obsession took me, was to dishonesty even, to where I couldn't think, you know, clearly. I just simply couldn't think except to relieve that obsession. I am grateful to say today I've been relieved from that obsession. Not to say, as people have said, you know, occasionally the speaker said, oh, you know, it's what if we act on it, you know, we can. So occasionally I'll have the thought, you know, or I'll smell something, like somebody said. That happens, but I have come in completely relieved of the craving to act on it. Mm-hmm. And so for that, I am so grateful.
Thank you. What we're hoping is that a word, a statement, something will be said to just really move that acceptance from your head to your gut, to your stomach, to you really, really just get a hold of it. Step one is so important. So I hope someone has said something. It's not magical, but something that would just hold you to that thought that I am a food addict, I'm powerless over food, and my life had become unmanageable, and I'm at a point of acceptance. With that, we're going to move on to step two. Here, once again, is a summary. And I'm hoping that I could get a reader this time. Okay, thank you.
All right. Step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You have convinced us in step one that we are compulsive eaters and that our lives are unmanageable. Having declared us to a state of absolute helplessness, you now declare that none but a higher power can remove our obsession. Some of us, one, won't believe in God, two, others can't, and still, three, others who do believe that a God exists has no faith whatever he will perform this miracle. So, where do we go from here? Consider next the plight of, one, those who once had faith but have lost it. There will be, two, those who have drifted into indifference. Three, those filled with self-sufficiency who have cut themselves off. 4, those who have become prejudiced against religion. And 5, those who are downright defiant because God has failed to fulfill their demands. Can see how experience tell all these that they may still find a faith that works. Sometimes see how comes harder to those who have lost or rejected faith than those who never had any faith at all. For they think they have tried faith and found it wanting. They have A, tried the way of faith, and B, the way of no faith. Since both ways have proved bitterly disappointing, they have concluded there is no place where whatever for them to go. The roadblock of indifference, fancied self-sufficiency, prejudice, and defiance often prove more solid and formidable than these people that any erected up by the unconvinced agnostic or even the militant atheist. Religion says the existence of God can be proved, and the atheist claims proof of the non-existence of God. Obviously, the dilemma of the wanderer from faith is that of profound confusion. He thinks himself lost to the comfort of any conviction at all. He cannot attain even a small degree the assurance of the believer, the agnostic, or the atheist. He is the bewildered one. Should I keep going?
Yes, go one more.
Okay.
Go one more.
Finally, when all the scorecards read 0, and we saw that no more strike will put us out of the game forever, we had to look at our lost faith. It was in see how that we rediscovered it, and so can you.
Okay, hold on there. Let's see if we can get someone else to share with us. Okay, thank you.
Now we come to another.
Give your name.
Oh, Suzanne, compulsive eater. Hi, Suzanne K. Now we come to another kind of problem. The intellectually self-sufficient man or woman. To these, many CEA members can say, yes, we were like you, far too smart for our own good. We love to have people call us precocious. We used our education to blow ourselves up into prideful balloons, though we were careful to hide this from others. Secretly, we felt we could float above the rest of the folks on our brain power alone. The God intellect displaced the God of our father. We found many in CEA Howe who once thought as we did. They helped us to get down to our right size. But their example, they showed us that humility and intellect could be compatible, provided we place humility first. When we began to do that, we received the gift of faith, the faith which works. The faith is for you too. When we encounter CEA Howe, the fallacy of our defiance was revealed. At no time had we asked what God's will was for us. Instead, we had been telling him what it ought to be. No man we saw could believe in God and defy him too. Belief meant reliance, not defiance. In CA Howe, we saw the fruits of this belief. Men and women spared from food addiction, final catastrophe. We saw them calmly accept impossible situations, seeking neither to run nor to recriminate. This was not only faith. It was faith that worked under all conditions. We soon concluded that whatever price in humility we must pay, we would pay.
Thank you. There are three questions on the back. relevant to the summary that we just read. Could you please fill out those questions? Step two. Came to believe. First we came to believe. It took a time to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Let me give you a summary of what I read. Therefore, step two is the rallying point for all of us, whether agnostic, atheists, believers, or former believers, and all others in between. We can stand together on this step, on this particular step. True humility and open mind can lead us to faith, and every See How meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we rightly relate ourselves to Him. Without acceptance, you cannot progress this far. You have to get to that point of acceptance. Acceptance is seeing things as they really are. That's our theme for this particular conference. Acceptance is understanding that we have spent our lives denouncing everything, and now we must open up our hearts as well as our minds and accept. We must accept the will of God and accept the only God, that only God can restore us to sanity. This is a big step. I struggled with this step as well. I got to a point where I gave my life to God, but I hadn't given my food. You see, I thought that, well, I paid for it, I worked for it, I can afford it. I came with all kind of excuses to keep my food mine without getting to the point of acceptance and giving my food as well as my will and my life to God. And once I did, what a relief. Remember that freedom from bondage? I felt that freedom. I no longer had to be in the driver's seat, per se. I was able to live a life of acceptance. Getting to that point wasn't that easy. It sounds a lot better than it was. But getting to the point of acceptance, meaning that I'm living in the presence. I'm no longer struggling with the negative character defects that basically ruled my life. And so it was gratifying to get to the point of acceptance. The faith that a power greater than myself can relieve me. Can I get someone to pitch on their writing of the first three steps, the first three questions of step two? Yes, sir.
Brendan, I'm a grateful compulsive eater.
Hi, Brendan.
First question is, how do you relate to the word insanity? Do you believe that a power outside yourself will restore you to sanity and help you? I wrote, I believe that I am being restored to sanity every time I check in with my higher power and every time I work the steps of my program and check in with my fellows. But I need to keep doing it. It isn't just some switch that gets hit and I become sane. It's a daily reprieve for me. On the second question about having an open mind, how open are you? I wrote, I'm much more open when I'm feeling desperate, and I need to remain open when things are working to not take myself a little back. And then the third one, are you at the point of acceptance? And I wrote, this is a moment-by-moment process for me. I always feel resigned to negative thinking. That's my first response. So acceptance, acceptance may not be my first response, but I know now that I have a choice and I have tools to get me there to acceptance.
Thank you. Anyone else like to share on their writing or on the first three steps, on the first three questions of step two?
Yes. Hi, I'm Bonnie, compulsive eater.
Hi, Bonnie.
Well, on the first question I wrote, I saw insanity in action when I saw myself gain and lose 30 pounds over and over, thinking that thinness would somehow cure me of wanting to eat too much and acting on it. I really thought the switch to keep eating would after I was full would be turned off and I would be healed. I proved that my version of I proved that my version and of science and health was wrong, but I still continued to try. It was the definition of doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I know a power greater than myself has helped me and continues to do for me what I cannot do for myself. And the only other thing I wrote is, the second question, do you have an open mind? How open are you? Lately, I've been concerned that my mind is less open to be able to listen to everyone in program and try to identify. Stresses and changes in my life, personal, physical, and professional, have made me more afraid. And without realizing it, I started relying more on self-reliance and became more isolated. Coming to this convention is recommitting to being open and has taken me out of the comfort zone of my own meetings and program people. That's as far as I got.
Thank you. Thank you, Bonnie.
Okay, insanity.
Give your name.
Oh, my name is Lois, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lois.
Hi. I've been in the program since December of 2017. When I came to the program, my blood sugar was in the 500 range. I was very, very sick, but very, very desperate. To me, insanity means you do things that are abnormal, not reasonable, crazy. It's when you're not in your right mind. For me, insanity was knowing that I was a type 2 diabetic, but yet I continued to eat the white flour and sugar. I was doing the same thing, expecting a different result. Insanity means you're in denial that you need help from God. By me coming to the CEHL program and admitting my total defeat and that I needed a power greater than myself to help me, within 3 months, my blood sugar went from 500 to the 130 range. And that was without medication. So am I open? The idea is not to take back the old ideas, but rely on yourself. Do I have an open mind? And yes, I do have an open mind because I want to change and I'm willing now to listen. I'm willing not to follow all of these fad diets, but listen to the food plan, admit that I need God's help, and don't negotiate anymore. Just do what I'm told to do. And it's very easy to deviate. But again, I have to look at those who have been successful and pray that I can emulate them in my life. No more negotiation. Just do what they say. Once you commit yourself to the program, it's really not that hard. What makes it hard is when we turn willingness to unwillingness, and that's what I want to avoid. And yes, I accept the fact that I'm a food addict, but I also accept the fact that God loves me and he will restore me to sanity one day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. Okay. Once we stop fighting a dependence of a higher power and start practicing the CHOW program in the best, to the best of our ability, we will begin to experience the miracles of recovery from the food obsession. We just need faith and an open mind. An open mind is the O of the HOW in the program. Now, here again, if something is said, some little gold nugget that you may be able to pan, you'll go panning and just find just a little nugget, just one little nugget. And I hope you get that from step two. Let's go to step three. I'm going to give you a few moments and then I'm going to read the the summary, and then we will answer the questions. Then we could complete the questions or complete the fill-ins, okay? Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand stood him. Practicing step three is like opening of a door which to all appearance is still closed and locked. All we need is a key and the decision to swing the door open. There is only one key, and it is called willingness, yes. Once unlocked by willingness, the door opens almost of itself. And looking through it, we shall see a pathway besides with an inscription, it reads, "This is the way to a faith that works." In the first two steps, we were engaged in reflection. We saw that we were powerless over food, but we also perceived that faith of some kind, if only in the CHOW program itself, is possible to anyone. These conclusions did not require action. To be sure, it's necessary, but faith alone can avail us nothing. We can have faith. Yes, keep God out of our lives. Therefore, our problem now becomes just how and by what specific means shall we be able to let God in. Step three represents our first attempt to do this. In fact, the effectiveness of the whole CHOW program rests upon how well and earnestly we have tried to come to a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. We can further add that a beginning, even the smallest, is all that is needed. Once we place the key of willingness in the lock and have the door even so slightly open, we find that we can always open it more. Through self-will, may slam it shut again, as it frequently does, it will always respond the moment we again pick up the key of willingness. Yes. Every man and woman who has joined Seahaw and intend to stick it, has, without realizing it, made a beginning on step three. Isn't it true that in all matters touching upon food, each of them have decided to turn his or her lives over to the care, protection, and guidance of Seahaw? Already a willingness has been achieved to cast out one's own will and one's own ideal about the food problems in favor of those suggested by Seahaw. Any willing newcomer feels sure Seahaw is the only safe harbor for the foundering vessel has become. Now, if this is not turning one's will and life over to a newfound providence, then what is? This is the big step. Making a decision. We can all make a decision right now. It doesn't take much to make a decision. But action got to follow. It's the action. This is an active program. And one of the reasons why we have a sponsor-led program, we had the opportunity to follow someone who took action and have shown results. So choose your sponsor well and follow without getting in a debate in society. It's not that simple sometimes for self-willed people if you haven't turned your life over to the care of a higher power. It can be a struggle. But choose a sponsor that you can follow because they did it. That's why they're sponsoring you. Don't give in to just questioning everything. It's not easy, I know that. You kind of smile, think about that. And I have five sponsees. And when they get to the point of just doing the work and following, you can see a lot of results. And I'm sure a lot of you, can attest to that. Do I have anyone who would like to share with us on step three? Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
I'm Marcia. I'm a grateful compulsive eater.
I'm Marcia.
And one of the first things I learned, one of the first surrenders coming into Seahaw was saying, I'm Marcia, I'm a compulsive eater. And I really didn't want to say that, but that was what you did in the meeting. And it was a face-to-face meeting, and it was, there was an embarrassment about that. And the other thing was, I was very intimate with my food. It was, you know, a really intimate relationship. And to have to tell somebody every day what I was going to eat was not easy. And then to tell them when I'm switching from beans to spinach or something within the food got, I mean, I had to tell them these intimate details about my intimate relationship with what had been my God, what had been, because food definitely was my God. It was directing my life, controlling my thoughts, and demolishing my health, and I still engaged in it. And it was a ruler, a merciless ruler. And would I submit to a sponsor who only had my best interest at heart, even though I didn't understand sometimes what that best interest was? And I belonged to the debating society. I debated everything. And people would say, Marcia, you'd argue with a fence post. And I had to learn in this program not to do that. Marcia, no, you shouldn't do that. And the whys would come up. Why can't I do that? And I wanted to protest. So the first surrender was saying, yes, I will work this food program. And then the next, there were all these little surrenders after, the little surrenders about reporting my food, about calling every morning. And sometimes I was tired. I didn't want to make that call. But there was a sponsor. This is a gift. There was a person willing to listen to my food commitment. And I have developed a gratitude for that because it gave me stability in my life. And I did not have, food does not give you stability. It gives you a driving demand. Mm-hmm. And I am grateful that I could make the surrender to the Sea Help program. Thank you.
Thank you, boss. Yes, ma'am.
Francis, compulsive eater, willingness. I appreciate you said something about sponsors. Choose them wisely. Let me get my thoughts together here now. One of the things I think is very, very important that I heard Ray Z say one time was that if it's not working with, if you don't have a relationship with your sponsor that is very close, you know, like you really connect, move on. And I really take that to heart. I really think that's very, very important. And I think the same thing goes for when you have someone asks you to be their sponsor and you sense that there's something, the debating, as you put it, move on. Let them go. Because they're wasting my time and theirs, as far as I'm concerned. And that's not a cruelty. It's that they're just not going to do it. And you're not going to see the results. And I want someone to get it. I've had problems with my program, and it's all about my will, taking it back. And I now have a little over 30 days, and I'm very grateful for that because I decided to stop the debating in my head about, well, you know, I can just have a little bit and nobody's ever going to know because they won't see the results on me. And that debating is detrimental to me. And when I chose my sponsor, I was really, I had to go through two others to get her. But I will say that I'm very blessed to have her. Because when I finally owned up to what had happened and stopped lying to myself and being honest with her, she didn't beat me up. She just said, oh, Francis. And was loving and kind. And I just couldn't believe how fortunate I was to have someone that would just still love me. And she said that, I'm not going to beat you up. You've already done that. And I thought, you're right, because every day I'd get on my knees. I swear I would get on my knees and say, God, please help me, and then run to the kitchen and eat or go to the store and obsess about some sugar or something and just couldn't. The obsession was just, I was killing me.
And when I decided finally one day, I said, I can't do this anymore. I just can't. And I had to come clean. The weight of that, carrying that around, was lifted. And I know that for me, this time, the willingness to be gut-level honest and work my program on a back-to-back basis for the first time since God knows when is the best thing that ever happened to me, because it's made me realize how precious this program is and how important it is to be willing, truly willing, to do the right thing in this program. And you will get results if you do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. I hope something was said, some word, some sentence, some point in which you came to believe. And now you have a stronger program. I have one more thing to pass out. Every man or woman who has joined C. Howe and intend to stick has, without realizing it, made a beginning on step three. If you get an opportunity, could you fill this out and we go close with the third step prayer? Before we do, can we get someone else to share with us on the third step? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Marjorie, compulsive eater.
Hi, Marjorie.
Step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. That's really hard, especially growing up and knowing that there's a God, because I was always so mad, like, why would I do that? He made my life sucky. But as I've worked my program over the last 4.5-ish years, I've seen the miracles that have happened, and I appreciate this workshop today, because one of the first things that stood out to me in step two was belief meant reliance. Well, I believe in God. That means I have to rely on him. Dang it. Okay. And then step three, I actually have to make a decision. Okay, well, I'm really good at that. I do this, do that. I like to direct people around. But so make a decision, turn my will over to God. Okay, God, I have these things that I'm doing and you're going to help me. I mean, please help me with them. We can have faith yet keep God out of our lives. That really stuck out to me. But also I think that faith is not to perfectly know everything, but to have have hope in something that I can't see. And I can't see the end, but I've seen where I was and where I'm at now. And I know that it was God that gave those gifts and those talents to me to be able to do that. And the part here, it says, through self-will, I can slam the door shut again, which, you know, been my weekend. It's like, okay, God, you're gonna help me. I mean, you can help me. Cool. Thanks for helping me. Like, I was trying to get something and I needed to go to 2 different places and I don't live around here and I don't know where stuff is. And so I went to the one place and the second place I needed to go was like right there. And that was just one small little thing that still makes me laugh. I can't believe it. And so step three is, it's something that comes and goes, And I'm grateful that I have been able to turn my will and my life over to the God of my understanding, and hope that I can learn to do it better so that I can keep in recovery and learning to do better and be better. And I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Marjorie. What we're going to do, we're going to recite the third step prayer. Then we're going to close with the serenity prayer. Third step prayer, put your name in it if you choose to. God, I, Ernest, offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I, Ernest, may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that over them may bear witness to those I, Ernest, with help of thy power, thy will, and thy will. May I, Ernest, do thy will always. Amen. Amen. I did that once before at I don't know if it was at a meeting or a workshop. And about almost 8 years later, one little lady came to me and she said, I remember you. And she pulled out her third step prayer with her name still in it. And she carried it around with her. And it just amazed me. I said, so I just figured that we got to do it once again. And at least maybe one somebody. And sometimes it doesn't take much. Sometimes it takes that one little thing that drives you and it guides you. And you never forget it. So I hope that we heard or we said something today that could be that one thing that's needed. Can we stand and close with the serenity prayer?